Hello there, and welcome to Gilded in Blood, the Horror Lit Podcast. My name is Kevin, and it is time for another Short Shock episode where we cover a short story that I believe needs particular attention. Now, seeing as how this is the last Tuesday before our big holiday of Halloween, it's coming up, it's under a week away, we're getting very excited, I figured that we need to take a short story about Halloween and present it to you here. So today we're going to be talking about Robert R. McCammon's He'll Come Knocking at Your Door, which is one of my favorite Halloween short stories of all time. I have, of course, multiple collections of short stories that happened on Halloween, certainly enough to keep me going through multiple years of making sure that we have some short stories that deal with the holiday as the holiday approaches. This one is undoubtedly my favorite. I adore this short story. Did the second I read it many years ago when I was really in a Robert R. McCammon phase. Again, this being a Short Shock episode, we're not going to talk too much about him. We will discuss his life and his career when we cover some of his novels. Certainly, we are going to do so as the podcast progresses. But right now, you're getting your first introduction with a short story of his. This is collected in a collection of his short stories called Blue World, and I highly recommend you go out and get this collection. Read, of course, He'll Come Knocking at Your Door, but read all of them in that book. It is a crackerjack book. There's so many excellent short stories. The man has a wonderful sense of injecting the weird into some short stories. Not so much weird as in Lovecraftian, kind of slimy alien gods kind of thing. Just taking some mundane situations, just, you know, he's Southern. He was born and raised in the South, and he has kind of a very Southern Gothic sensibility to his stuff. And a lot of his stories take a very regular setting and twist it in some way that is very unsettling and very disturbing. In that, I would say he's probably on the level of Stephen King, who does that maybe the best of anybody, but he particularly does that very well in his short stories, this one being no exception. So let's stop talking about it and get into it. One of my favorite things about this short story is it starts off with just a picture-perfect image of fall, of autumn. It's such a great scene, you know, dead leaves blowing, kind of the bright sunshine of the waning day, but a chill in the wind and the air, the darkness of the hills as the sun starts to set. It's a really gorgeous way to start the story. And in this kind of idyllic, picturesque setting, we're introduced to our family, the family that we're going to follow throughout the story, and that's the Burgess family. And they live in this little company town that's just picture perfect. It's a Norman Rockwell kind of town. Everybody knows everybody, everybody's friends with everybody, and we're told that Dan Burgess, our main character here, has fallen on hard times before he came to Essex, this town. He had been let go from his job. He was in trouble with the bank. He didn't have enough money. He and his family were really in dire straits. And then he happened to luck on this job where things just started happening for him. Good luck seemed to just fall at his feet the second he came to this town. But we're told all of these things right at the outset. And of course, this is all through Dan's eyes. So he just thinks, wow, What a wonderful thing. Lucky turns everywhere I look. Of course, we as the reader are like, well, that's not normal. That's probably, there's might be something going on there. And of course, so that raises our hackles and kind of raises some red flags right there at the beginning of the story, even though there's nothing necessarily ominous quite yet, but we're primed to think, something may be going on here. And an element that kind of heightens that is that Dan remembers that the only bad thing that has happened to him since he came to this town, that since he started this job, is that when he signed the lease for this house, the pen that he was holding had like a sharp sliver of plastic that he ran his thumb across and kind of sliced it open. Some of his blood fell down on the lease, which he says was embarrassing. And I would suspect that anybody listening to this, and certainly me myself, thought, oh, you you screwed up. that was a bad deal. You should have run right then. Of course he doesn't, and he's here. And that kind of gives the reader, it clues the reader in on some of the things that might be happening. And as the story opens, his wife and daughter are getting ready for Halloween. They're baking cookies and getting candies ready for trick-or-treaters. They're figuring out their daughter's costume. And his wife says, oh, this person wants you to come down. There's a meeting that he wants you to go down and check in on before Halloween night starts. He's like, well, that's quite odd, but sure, fine. He jumps in his truck that he won in a raffle, because another lucky thing, and drives in to see what this meeting is all about. Now, we start to get a few more ominous things as he goes into town and goes to this meeting at Roy's. This is a person who is the realtor who actually sold him the house. We're told that his wife, Laura, limps a little bit because she had a mowing accident. And I say that in a weird way, because we're going to soon find out that it probably wasn't a mowing accident that left her with a few fewer toes. And this, of course, seems like an odd detail to mention, but not really in light of what the reader learns here in a little bit. He goes downstairs and finds Roy with all the other men in the town, and the mood is instantly tense, unsettled, unhappy, and it looks like they are going over this list that Roy is holding, and Dan thinks to himself that it looks dirty. It looks like it's been used to wipe trash, dirt or grease off of something, then thrown in the trash. And Roy is reading this list, and it seems to be a list of items that each person in the room is needing to provide in some way. So Dan is understandably confused at this moment, and eventually Roy sort of lays it on him. He says that this has been happening for quite a long time. This has fallen to me for some reason, but as Halloween approaches, I find this list under my doorstep one morning, and everybody is listed on it, and this is what we need to give up to the devil. The devil's going to come around tonight. He is going to collect these things. We are to put them out on the porch. He will collect them and move on. And if we don't give him the things that he wants, he'll come knocking at your door, he will get in, and he will take more than he wanted in the first place. Now, I am sure that McCammon does a wonderful job of kind of putting us in Dan's head. Obviously, Dan's like, well, okay, where's the damn joke here? This is so stupid. We're really talking about giving the devil things on Halloween night. How stupid is this? But Roy starts to kind of bring him around. He reminds Dan that, well, you've gotten everything you wanted since you came here. Everything has gone your way all the time. Haven't you wondered why that is? And it's a little bit relatable. We would be in Dan's shoes of saying, well, this is just utter nonsense. But if you were in a situation where all of a sudden things just started happening to you, that were all good, every single thing is good. Oh, an uncle I'd never heard of died and left me $18,000? What the hell? Okay. And things of that nature just keep happening and happening and happening. And then if somebody said, well, it's time to pay the piper, obviously most of your mind would be like, well, this is dumb. But there would be an inkling that said, uh-oh, I have been taking all this. And Dan thinks that too. He says, he reacts with this anger and disbelief, but he's already in this because he has already accepted all of these things that have been given to him. And it seems that according to how this system works, whatever it is, knowledge of the rules governing this arrangement is not requisite to be bound by them. It doesn't matter if you know what was going on or not. You're in this. And Dan does remember, oh, that blood fell just under my name on that lease. Maybe I was signing something that I really didn't mean to be signing. So Dan, of course, asked the question that we're asking as well. What does he want from me this first year that I have to do this? And it requires a complete set of clippings from his fingernails and the little joint from his daughter's right hand. And they even have this surreal, awful conversation with the butcher. It's like, well, it's not going to hurt very much. And the butcher is like, no, just one sharp crack with a cleaver will take care of it. It shouldn't bleed very much, shouldn't cause as much pain. You'll be fine. It's just like, oh my God. It really is. It's a wonderful little scene. And Dan just can't wrap his head around this. He's flabbergasted. He doesn't know what the hell to do. And just kind of an interesting side note here. To me, there's a little bit of social commentary here. You know, what these men propose is classic brutal capitalism. And it's no mistake that this is a company town. This is a town that is built, a community built around making money. They are all in this money-making venture together. And they're afforded the good life at an expense, and they are willing to pay that expense for the good life. And there's even the quote, he says, you know, once in a while there's a pause there, he takes something of value, but not very often, and he always gives us back so much more than he takes. And there's a wonderful moment, you know, of course, Dan flees the house. He's like, I've got to get my family the hell out of here. These people are insane. But there's a wonderful moment where he thinks, if they would have just asked for like a lock of my daughter's hair, or just some clippings from her fingernails, or you know, something little, would I have gone along with it? Obviously, it was so drastic that it made him instantly kind of recoil from the idea, but he's horrified to be asking himself, I don't know that I would have not given it if it would have been something lesser. And that means he would have been really complicit in what was going on. So of course he gets home. He's kind of freaking out at his wife and his kid. He's like, oh my God, we've got to get out of here. Just grab anything we can. And his wife is like, well, I mean, it's Halloween. People are going to be coming around. He's like, no, just get what you can get. We need to get out of here. And he goes and he starts the truck, and the truck dies. Because the truck was given to him. He got it from whoever is coming around tonight, and whoever is coming around tonight does not want him leaving in that same truck. So they're really trapped, and of course he barricades the door, he starts a fire, and we have this excellent shift of tone. We see the same sort of scene, the dead leaves blowing, the darkening hills, the chill in the air. And whereas at the beginning of the story, it was very cozy, it was very nostalgic, it gave that wonderful sense of autumn, now it is terrifying, it is horrifying. It's that there's something coming to the door tonight. We're not going to give it what it wants. Will it get in? So it's a great shift of tone using the exact same set pieces. So Robert R. McCammon is a wonderful writer. Of course, we will talk about him later, but he really displays his skill in manipulating the reader in terms of just using the same setting really shifts everything to a much different tone. It's a wonderful aspect to the story. And I'd like to go back to that truck not starting just for a moment. This is kind of a classic trope of horror that, oh, the car won't start, or our means of escape is cut off somehow. But what pisses me off about it in movies and some, even some books and stories, is that it happens so because we need to keep the characters there. You know, it makes no sense why a car or truck that would be working perfectly, or even for that matter, a cell phone, why all of a sudden would it fail? It failed because the damn screenwriter needed it to fail so that we could keep the characters in the situation. However, in this story, it's organic. It's particularly effective because it's organic to the story. There is a perfect reason the truck doesn't want to start. The truck is not going to start because it was given to him by something that wants to collect for it. And if the guy is not willing to put up for that, he takes the usefulness of this tool away. And that is a perfect example of what makes something good is setup and payoff. So many things happen, so many tropes in the horror genre happen without proper setup. So they don't pay off very well. They make the reader or the viewer roll their eyes because, okay, of course, there's no signal, or, oh no, my truck won't start, I can't get away. But there's no reason why that would actually happen. But if you set that up beforehand, when that payoff comes, it's so much better. It actually heightens the tension, and it credits the reader with a little bit of intelligence. You are crediting your reader by saying, you understand how this works, So it's a much fuller, much richer story if you set it up a little bit before you pay it off. So I guess horror writing 101, a little bit of a lesson here, but it's a wonderful aspect to the story that everything that happens in here, there's a reason for it, and it makes the story all the better. Okay, back to the story. So as they wait there, as the dark falls outside, of course, they hear shuffling on the porch. They feel this bone aching cold, and something slams into the door, knocks on the door, like a, I think it says, like a sledgehammer. The door shakes in its frame, and then there's sounds on the roof, and there's sounds all around the house of this thing trying to get in. It's very tense and it's very scary. And then all of a sudden, you hear laughter outside, and everybody's like, okay, that's enough. Come on out. It was all just a joke. And this prank, part of your mind knows in the back, it's like, this is not a prank. This is a bad idea. And it's a wonderful sense that the second he opens the door, because of course he gets turbo pissed. He's like, oh, you sons of bitches, you've put me through all this for a prank. And the second he grabs the door handle, his wife says, Dan, no. And then he's opening the door. And this attempted fake out, this kind of all is a prank, is very good here and heightens the creepiness when he opens the door and only one person is standing there. Of course, we heard the voices of all the men outside, and it's only just this one person who, of course, tries to attack the family. Now, Dan kind of fends him off, and they flee the house, and they are on this road in the darkness, trying to get to the next town, walking through these black hills, and then all of a sudden this SUV pulls up, and it's this mother and a couple of kids who are trick-or-treating, obviously, and it's like, well, are you okay? And it's like, no, we've had an accident. We need a ride into town. And she's like, yeah, sure, fine, get in. And as they're driving along, you know, of course, his baby daughter is crying, his wife is all upset, and the woman driving the van looks up in the rearview mirror and says, so if you had an accident, where's your car? And then this wonderful end scene begins. He feels something hit his hand and he looks and he touches it and he's like, that looks like saliva. And he looks up and the van is growing teeth. And the bottom of the van is growing teeth as well. And he just loses his mind and starts laughing. And the thing behind the wheel says, Happy Halloween. And these jaws slam shut and start to grind together. And then whatever this thing is kind of scurries off into the hills. And that's the end of the story. And this final scare with a van that turns into the set of jaws is just so wonderfully grotesque and frightening. Because as the reader, you're kind of not prepared for it. You know, sure, you're expecting some horrible monster to meet them in the dark, this anthropomorphic figure with a, you know, the typical demon with the wings and the horns and all this kind of stuff, but a vehicle that seems to be their saving grace and turns out to be like a trap that they willingly step into is just absolute utter genius. And the first time I read it, and I don't know if this says something about me or something, maybe I'm just a super gullible guy, in which case I love stories that are able to do this for me, I was floored. I was really not expecting that. So when he looks up and sees these teeth growing out of the top of the van, I curdled, my skin crawled, and I was like, oh my God, that's so creepy. It's really a wonderful atmospheric short story. I hope that some people, at least one, you know what? I just want one of you to be heeding my advice and going and reading these short stories before we talk about them here on the podcast. I just want one. Can I just have one? Hopefully more than that, but hopefully at least one person is doing that so that you will get to experience these short stories before we talk about them here on the podcast. Because of course, the short stories, I kind of just give the whole ghost away rather than in a novel, I can be a little bit more coy and hold back a little bit, but there's really not much to hold back on a short story. So hopefully some of you got to kind of experience this, but even though you've heard the story, I really urge you to go out, get a copy of the book Blue World by Robert R. McCammon and read this short story and read all the other ones too. But this one is just so good. The atmosphere, the feeling of it is so autumn and so Halloween. It just works so well. I can't recommend it enough. So hopefully you go out, get that book, read this story, It's just such a delight. All right, that does it for this week's Short Shock. We've got another couple of episodes coming up. Next week, we're going to have a full episode, which will be a genre-busting beast episode, where I try to convince you that a book that is not listed as horror is actually horror. And we're going to take on the queen of mystery, Agatha Christie, and I'm going to convince you that And Then There Were None is actually a horror story. It's a very good mystery, but it's also a very wonderful horror novel. And then 2 weeks from today, we will be going over another short story. This one, I'm willing to bet I'd put all of my savings and my paychecks for the next 25, 30 years on the fact that not one of you has ever heard of probably this author or this short story, which is primarily why I wanted to pick it. This short story is such a good short story and deserves to be read more. It is called The Shepherd's House by Colin Insull. So in a fortnight, I will be sharing with you a short story that most people have not read, but my God, it deserves a lot more attention. So that's what's coming up. Of course, I hope that you've been listening to the bonus episodes where we've been going over 100 horror movies that I say you should probably check out in the month of October. And next Monday on Halloween night, we will be going over our final bonus episode. That will be my top 20, the 20 horror films that I feel are the best of the best. And we'll do it in a countdown style and we will lead up to what I feel is the best horror movie and what I honestly feel is the best movie of all time. So hopefully you stay tuned for that and you're enjoying that bonus content that I'm trying to give to you guys. Hopefully you're having a wonderful October, and I really hope that you have a good plan for Halloween, whether it's watching a horror movie, whether it's handing out trick-or-treats, whether it's taking somebody trick-or-treating yourself, or maybe just driving around and looking at the decorations. This is my favorite month, this is my favorite holiday, this is my favorite season of all, and I hope it is for you too, and I hope you're having a great one, and I hope you're enjoying it. Thanks to Swarm for the use of his music. You can find this podcast, as always, at gildedinblood.buzzsprout.com or at any of the regular podcast platforms. And until next time, stay safe and stay spooked.